Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
And good to be maybe wrapping up this longest series ever.
Maybe in the history of radio.
But hey, it's a big subject, foundational questions to think about. Yeah, you've discussed a lot of these same kinds of issues on individual programs.
Right.
But as a continual discussion, this is the longest series ever. We're down to the wire here with how to best leave your beneficiaries, your inheritance, their inheritance, and getting into some of the issues with maybe younger kids and some special needs.
Yeah, we've been taking a look at, if you walked into my office, what are the foundational questions that I would ask? And then hopefully, why? I like whys. So I want to understand, why is someone asking me this question, so I can actually get to a proper answer? And that's really been the heartbeat of this entire series, that if you come into the office, this is what we're going to be talking about, and here's why. And all those can be found at legacyandfaith.com, all the podcasts. It's been a longer series. I'm not sure how many different podcasts we have now, 15, 16. It has been a longer series, but I've gotten a lot of really good feedback that it's been hitting a good mark with listeners, and so I'm glad for that. And so we've been talking about now the home stretch of beneficiaries. Last week we talked about how to take off maybe those parental glasses, how we see our kids emotionally. I don't think that my kids are going to spend all the money if I give it to them. They're responsible. And we talked a lot about that. We talked about that, yes, but how they take care of their own money may not be exactly indicative of how they would take care of your money once you've passed away. Mm-hmm. So we talked through some of those things last week, and now we're going to turn the corner. Like you said, we're going to talk about some beneficiaries who really can't help themselves. So either minors, or if you have a disabled beneficiary, how do we structure things around them to make sure that indeed they can use money long term? Because that would be one of the primary concerns, is if I leave something to a minor, if I leave something to a child who has no ability to care for themselves, how do we ensure that that money is going to be used long-term and for their benefit instead of used for the benefit of others, that the fees wouldn't be extraordinary and things of this nature. Mm-hmm. So as we look at these type of beneficiaries who need assistance, so let's talk about a child who may be fully disabled. Well, there is a theory out there that says I should not give that beneficiary any money at all. I should leave it to their sibling. And their sibling, who's always been taking care of the money, will then make sure that it is spent for their sibling, and they're going to watch over it. Okay, let's talk that one out really quick. Number one, that is actually not a good plan at all. Mm. That's actually counterproductive. Really? Okay. From a better plan. So there's multiple issues with that. Number one, yes, you entrust the care of that child with their sibling. Fine. I'm not going to push against that aspect of it. However, that sibling might be married. So how do they caretake it and watch it if it becomes community property? Who is the next person who is going to caretake it if something happens to the healthy or the child who's going to watch over their sibling? Mm-hmm. What if they all of a sudden have health issues? What if they run into difficulties through divorce? And let's say the money is well protected and the other spouse is not trying to clamor after that, and they respect the money, that is for someone else. But what if life presents such a difficulty for them that it's hard for them to take care of themselves, let alone manage someone else's money now? Mm. So what is the backup plan in that scenario? Mm. Well, there is no backup plan when you just hand it to someone else. There's also gifting problems. So if we give it to someone and then they start spending their own money on the caretake of another person, there are IRS rules that say you can only give so much money to another person before it becomes a gift and it has to be reported to the IRS. And so that would be a consideration. What if that child that you are entrusting the money with already has sufficient money of their own? Now, when they pass away, that would be considered theirs. And if they did not do a good job of caretaking it to the next person to watch after their sibling, then that could be a problem. Also, it could be an issue that money is going to be taxed again when it's in the hands of the other child. So there, and I could go on and on, actually. What if that sibling is in a car accident and they're sued and they don't have sufficient insurance? And now not only is their money on the line, but now their sibling's money is on the line. There's so many layers of that is bad planning. And I could go on probably for the whole show, but we're going to wrap up the series today, so I'm not going to. And so what is better? So it is superior to create a plan for the disabled child that is in consideration of the disabled child. So there are ways that we can create trust that will not disqualify somebody from social benefits. Now, that's one of the big reasons that that out there in the public, that someone would actually say, I've heard that I shouldn't give money to my disabled child. That may be accurate. However, it's not perfectly accurate. We want to make sure it's not given to them outright, put into their name, put into their social security number. That could be accurate because if they have money, then the state would say, well, now they have money. We're going to turn off all of the support.
All the Medicaid.
Until that person has spent all the money and is back down into poverty level. So that would be a bad plan too. So having a disabled child on as a beneficiary in an IRA or bank account or other things, or having no plan at all when you have that a child that you need to caretake, that's bad planning. It's good planning to think about how do we create a plan specifically for that individual that will protect them, that has all the multiple different safety nets for the rest of their life in play and already prepared. That's good planning. And we can create trusts that allow for the caretaking of an individual who needs social assistance, and we know they're going to need social assistance, and it will not interrupt any of their assistance at all. As a matter of fact, a special needs trust, it technically it's called a supplemental trust, but we call it a special needs trust. It's specifically designed to ensure that that money is going to be a supplement to their needs or to the care that they're already getting. So it's a more complicated trust. The average person does not manage it well. However, they can be taught. And so if we have a sibling who is willing to be taught how to manage and distribute a special needs trust, then great. We'll lean into them.
What if you just have one child and that is the special needs child?
Yeah. So then there are other organizations. There's some nonprofit organizations that we can look into. We need to find someone else who is going to be the caretaker of that money, who is going to be the next trustee of those funds. And there's different ways to do that. There can be a professional trustee and you can just simply pay them and they're going to know how to manage a special needs trust. There's organizations and even nonprofits that will bring in the finances and ensure for the rest of your child's life that they are taken care of. But then if the money is not used for them, then because it's a nonprofit, it becomes part of the nonprofit to help other families who are in
similar situations. So I was going to say that, let's say it was all bigger chunk of money, and your kid, maybe a Down's child, a lot of times don't live that long.
Yeah.
So then they die pretty young, and yet there's still this big pile of money.
Yeah.
Then where does it go?
Yeah.
And they were the only heir.
Yeah. So then we can have contingency plans, which is then what do we do with the money? Yeah. Does it go to other family members? Does it go to nieces and nephews? Does it go to charity?
I see.
So the beauty is that when we create proper planning, we can build all the contingencies.
Right.
So what if the sibling who is going to take care of of the special needs child? What if they, again, become unhealthy or can't do it, so we have contingency plans of who's going to manage the money? Or what if they just wear down and they go, okay, this is more than I thought? Mm. Well, we're going to empower that person to hand it off. This is very similar to what we do with minor children as well, which is minor children cannot protect themselves. So if you're out there listening and you no longer have minor children, then your kids probably have minor children and they need to do good estate planning. And so what if we have minor children? A lot of the same issues apply, which is, what if we're going to entrust one of our siblings to take care of our kids? But what if that sibling isn't really good with money, but they're a great parent? They're a nurturer. They have the same values that align. They're going to raise the kids in the fear of the Lord like you want. That could be a great parent, but maybe they're not good with money. So we need to find someone else who may be a good caretaker financially of the money and have them work cooperatively to upbring the kids. Mm. At what age do we want minors to then start receiving a little bit more? This kind of goes back into last week's discussion of, when is it appropriate to start giving more access to a beneficiary? Well, when they're minors, it's very easy to understand that they don't have the capacity and ability to manage their own money. So then we're going to develop a plan through their 20s to get them through college and then start inviting them into managing it with whoever you have entrusted with the finances, to train them and teach them what does it mean to manage whatever is left over. And then possibly in their 30s, start turning on some of the income sources and other things to caretake them so that they can have greater accessibility to their inheritance. And for how long, that's up to you. That's your vision. And when we create a minor child plan, things change very quickly. So a couple episodes ago, we talked about relationship matters. This is where relationship really matters, to have a relationship with an estate planning firm that will have the ability to give you consistent inroads to make these adjustments. Because if we develop a plan for teenagers, because they're minors, and now all of a sudden 5 and 10 years later, that plan is going to be out of date really quickly. So we need to have the ability to reach back into that plan to make sure that it's flexible and changeable as we watch them continually grow. So making a minor child plan and ensuring long-term financial safety, long-term financial unwind, instead of just here's the lump sum mentality. So, look, if you don't do anything and you name a minor child, that's going to be locked up in the courts when they're minors. And then at the age of 18, they're going to get it. So they've just lost both their parents. That's how this happens. They lose their parent or the main custodian, and now they're being raised by someone else. And what is the emotional status of the child? Very, very different probably than what they are today. Mm. So we need to make sure that we have a long-term, strong financial plan to accommodate minor children or individuals who can't take care of themselves. It may be a special needs child. There's ways to make sure that they are going to benefit from what their portion is and benefit long-term, and have multiple contingencies to ensure their long-term safety.
As you're listening, you can tell that Paul has thought of a number of scenarios maybe you haven't thought about, and you like the way he thinks, and you think he can help you with your estate plan for your family, extended family. You want to find out more? How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Legacy and Faith Show this week, kind of wrapping up our series on foundational questions, issues you want to have settled in your estate planning process. And what about the beneficiary who's pretty responsible, already has quite a bit of money, and they don't really need your money as you pass away, and how to plan for those people in those situations.
Yeah, so last week we talked a lot about taking off the parental binders and making sure that we make proper long-term decisions. And so let's talk about the complete opposite beneficiary than what the first part of the show talked about. So we talked about someone who needs assistant and can't manage money at all. Mm-hmm. There's plans that we can work in the middle of those who may spend it too quickly, don't have the financial skill, have never managed $500 or $1,000 or $1 million or a couple million dollars and need a long-term plan. But what about the child who really is well off? Who really is responsible, who really is going to manage this well. So why would we want to put a trust around the smaller amount that we're going to give? So again, let's stay with that it's about $500,000. It's what we used last week. So kind of been setting up that figure. Someone's going to receive $500,000, but they have a job and they've already built their own personal wealth. Why in the world would we not just simply give it to them?
Yeah, give it to a charity then. They don't need it, so I'm going to give it to a charity instead.
Fine, but there's a lot of most individuals that I deal with have a very high value of I want to leave something to kids. I must leave something to my kids.
Okay.
So we're going to leave it to them. But why would we put it in a trust? Well, number one, the trust can be very flexible so they can have a lot of access to it. But here, let's say that your child already has $2-4 million or more, and now they don't need your money. Well, they already have an estate that is taxable in Washington State. So any money that you give them, if you're subject to taxes in Washington. Number one, we're going to pay your taxes if we don't do planning properly. Then they're going to take that money, they're going to grow it, and then when they die, it's going to be taxed yet again. Mm. So when we have a well-off beneficiary and we have the value to make sure that they still get something, then we definitively want to leave it into a trust because it's going to stop the multiple taxation of that money received. So when we leave it into a trust, when our trust is properly designed, that is a big deal. I've seen a lot of trusts and they're poorly done. Mm. They are not properly done with a generational mindset. So when they are not properly done, the money either goes outright or it's not going to protect generational money and it might be re-exposed to the taxation system, even when it's in a trust. So when a trust is properly designed, it can actually be taxed at your level only, and then it's not re-exposed to to estate taxes. Always income. Income tax, someone always has to pay income tax. The government wants their money, but not to the estate taxing system. We can create a generational plan to where when that child who doesn't need the money and they're going to preserve it for the next generation, then we can actually ensure that it's generationally passed without further taxes. Not only that, but we can give a lot of flexibility so that they can use it for the next generation. They can pass that on to the next generation before their death. So what would it look like if Grandma and Grandpa, they gave me this money, but I'm never going to need it. I'm never going to use it. So I'm going to give it to you because it was entrusted to me. I'm going to give it to you early before my death. And this is Grandma and Grandpa's legacy. Let's use it together and start blessing the grandchildren's life, but at the control of the children. Mm. So because we're gone, then we entrust our children to watch over the grandchildren. And when it's proper, we could actually design it around. They can go ahead and start passing it off at any point in time that they want, building up the next generation, providing a safety net and a different foundation financially than maybe what we've ever experienced. So what would it look like if we could set the next generation out financially solid? What would their life look like if they could dream about building the kingdom instead of dream about just having enough to make it in their life? Well, what would have our lives looked like if we had the financial stability and the blessing of God at an age to where we were financially able to then walk into what He designed for us, instead of struggling and trying to capture money just to survive?
Yeah, this is assuming, though, that these kids and grandkids are mature and are kingdom-focused and are that way with money, because you hear these horror stories about, like, the trust fund baby and, you know, kids who didn't earn it, and so they have no sense of
financial responsibility.
Or blessing or how to handle it, or they just are just the most entitled people there is.
Right. Know? But remember where we started. We started with our child is very financially responsible and they have enough money. So we're going to entrust our child with the inheritance, but we're going to put in ways that they can then assist their children and start their child's financial life. So we're entrusting that our child is going to watch over that next generation and implement it properly. Versus, we can create grandchildren trust. So we can give some to our child, we can give some to the grandkids, and we can put boundaries around that, just like we did with minor children in before break. So there's ways we can develop it right away. But a lot of times we're going to entrust our own children because they're going to watch it.
We're discussing the scenario where you have a responsible family
as
opposed to all my progeny are bums and I don't want to give them anything.
Yeah.
So that's not what we're talking about.
No.
That's a whole different discussion.
No, we entered into the complete opposite of someone who needs assistance. And now we're talking about the person who doesn't need assistance, who really is the good beneficiary, who really does have enough money of their own. And yet the value is we want to leave money to them. Well, what if we created a plan to where they could start blessing early? What if they could build the next generation on a solid footing and use whatever they've been blessed with.
And you need
a
good trust and a good plan to be able to accomplish that.
So we want to create really, really good instructions and flexibility around someone who already has enough and who is going to be responsible, because we want to start thinking generationally for them as a family. So even if you say it's not very much, actually, it matters to the next generation, and it matters to the beneficiary themselves, so that it's not going to be a taxable inheritance to them. So because they have enough, we need to mitigate taxes and we need to make a preparation. And not only that, I'm back to the discussion of, okay, fine, they have more than enough, but what if their marriage is not working out well and the spouse and that marriage doesn't work out? So they have to split their own wealth, but now they have a backup amount, because I never know what the future holds. We want it to work out great. We want it to work out properly, but I don't have any guarantees that my children's future spouses, neither of them are married, but that their future spouses will stay the course and have the same value of long-term relationship and long-term marriage as what I hopefully I've put into my girls. And so because I can't know that, I want to protect my children from unnecessary taxes. Look, estate taxes are unnecessary. Mm. They're almost always unnecessary. We can pass wealth to the next generation wisely and intentfully. An estate tax is simply a tax that's not necessary. There's ways that we can build plans to mitigate and even completely eliminate estate taxes. So when we start looking at not just what you have, but what do the children have? And I think that's where a lot of estate planning that I have seen does a very, very poor job. Mm. It's not generationally minded. Mm. And so when we start talking about what does it look like to have what I have in the hands of the next generation, all of a sudden we start building a plan that is for their long-term protection, their long-term financial stability. We can create plans if they're minors or if they have special needs or they're going to need care for the rest of their life, or if we just have a beneficiary who's just bad with money, we can protect those individuals. But as to the ones who are responsible, we can also develop a long-term generational plan to ensure that taxes are mitigated, they have flexibility, that there are protections against divorce and other creditors. Really, we can create plans so that we can develop long-term financial vision for the family. It would be amazing, in my opinion, to set something out that has generational thought processes in mind.
Okay, you like the way Paul thinks? You like all the scenarios he thinks about that you didn't even know were a possibility, and you want to find out more about his services? How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, I'd love to meet with you. We got to sit down and talk about your specific situation, your specific family, and what does that look like? So head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's ways to communicate with us. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities. It's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
And that'll wrap this Foundations series, and one of the longest series we've done. And again, previous episodes at legacyandfaith.com. It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.